Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow sofas are built for the way you live. With thousands of possible configurations, their five-seating collections fit any decor, from classic mid-century style to sleek contemporary design. Burrow sofas are made to last and grow with you. You can add seats whenever and easily assemble your updated sofa with no tools needed. And free shipping always? That's just the cherry on top. Right now, save up to 50% during Burrow's spring sale at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? It's been a difficult few weeks at That Hoarder's house. So in what was meant to be my last solo episode, I instead did an intro saying I'd had some bad news and instead reshared the episode where I interviewed Laura Silverstein. Thank you to those of you who got in touch to say they hoped I was okay. The dehoarding darlings already know what's been going on. I wrote about it in this month's update, but it's all been pretty awful, to be honest. So the bad news I had got before I was meant to record the last episode was that a good friend of mine was dying, and that was pretty awful. And I tried to record and just couldn't. I couldn't deal with the silence of just my own thoughts and my own voice talking. So I swapped out for that episode that had been really popular. And then since then, I've done interview episodes, and that's been easier for me to get through because it's not so much being alone with my own thoughts. And so I was very sad that my friend was dying and I was struggling with the injustice of it. And then also out of the blue, a different friend died, and then the original friend died. And so I was facing the bereavement of two good friends who I really, really valued in my life, suddenly not being around anymore, and all the grief and sadness and unfairness and all of that that's been going on. So I'm not great. I'm not doing great. But I am pushing through. The people around me are being lovely, And that helps. When the second friend died, one of our mutual friends said, I'm just near your house. Do you want me to pop over? And I really wanted someone to pop over and give me a hug. But obviously I had to say no. And I'm trying to not turn that into fuel to beat myself up with. I'm instead trying to use it as a motivator to keep de-hoarding. Trying. So it's a difficult time. So I am now going to record the episode that I had all planned out a month ago, and then everything fell apart. So let's do it.
It's time for the success of the week and the weird dilemma of the week.
So my success of the week is that my kitchen door is closing. Let me explain. Over the last few months, my kitchen door has been closing in a really annoying way, and I've been trying to work out why it's different. Why is it different? What's different about the kitchen door? And I have worked it out. It's that for I don't know how many years, my kitchen door has been held open by what you can only call an excess of laundry powder, laundry liquid, laundry tablets, laundry whatever. They have been acting as my doorstop in the kitchen. And because I have been making do, and because I have been trying to use stuff instead of get new stuff, and because I have been trying to stop panicking that at some point there will be no laundry detergent in the world, I have been using it up, which is great. And so the difference, the thing that's been different about the kitchen door is that for the first time in years and years, it isn't propped open by laundry detergent. And so the reason it's been bugging me is because it's not held open for me constantly anymore. So that is my success of the week. My weird dilemma this week was some wrapping paper. I hate wrapping presents. And so a few years ago, I made an executive decision that I was no longer going to wrap presents. I overbought, let's face it, gift bags in every shape, size, colour, design. And that's what I use now. I use gift bags. And I found a whole pile of wrapping paper. And I had a weird dilemma about it because every sheet of the wrapping paper was a sheet that I had bought with a particular person in mind, or because I really liked how it looked. I liked the design. I liked the style. And so I was looking at these many sheets of wrapping paper, because often they come, like if you buy wrapping paper, it comes with two sheets of it. And so I would have used one on a gift for whoever I had in mind, and then still had the other one. And my dilemma was, I don't use wrapping paper anymore, and I don't want to use wrapping paper anymore, but I bought these bits of wrapping paper because I thought they were nice, or because I thought they were suitable for someone, and I really didn't want to get rid of them. And I knew I was being unreasonable because I knew I was never going to wrap gifts in it. And so it doesn't matter that I liked how it looked, or that I thought, oh, that would be really good for that particular friend. Didn't matter, because I was never going to wrap a gift in any of it. But it still took me ages to finally decide I could get rid of it. And I did get rid of it. What I did was I went on social media and asked my friends, does anyone want a big pile of wrapping paper? There's some Hello Kitty, there's some this, there's some that. And a close friend of mine said, yes, please. And so next time I saw her, I gave her a big bag of wrapping paper, so she's happy. I don't feel sad at it having gone. I feel like it was the right decision. I know I'm not going to use it. So it turned out well. But hoarding brains are so weird for dilemmas like that. So today, I am talking about de-hoarding or decluttering or tidying or cleaning or any of those things when you are really, really busy, when you've got no time and you want to be doing it or you know you should be doing it, but you're at work or you've got kids or you're at work and you've got kids. You might be caring for someone else, you might volunteer, you might have hobbies, and fitting in a task that you probably don't relish doing when you're already so busy is really hard. And I feel this. I work full time in, I have two different jobs and let's face it, a podcast that you're listening to now, and it all takes up a lot of time. And then at the end of the day, I'm exhausted. At the weekends, I resent doing things that are tedious, and a lot of de-hoarding can be quite tedious. I'm just always busy. I've always got things to do. And so I've been struggling to work out how to de-hoard when there's so much else that doesn't feel optional in my life. How do I fit this in as well? And so I've been looking into this, and it's what I'm going to talk about today. So the first thing to say is I did an episode about how living in a hoard is really time consuming. And that was kind of what prompted me to move on to this topic for this episode, because there is a tension in the knowledge that not having time to de-hoard means you're living in a hoard, and living in a hoard takes up a lot of additional time. And that is another of those famous vicious cycles that we know and love so well on this podcast. Living in a hoard is time consuming, so it's more important to de-hoard than ever. But if you turn that around, you can reframe it and think, rather than an impossible situation, which it feels like, reframe it as, given that I have no time, I feel I have no time to do this, that's a good indication that doing it will benefit me even more. Simplifying, decluttering, making space will have even more of a benefit on my life than it would if I wasn't busy. And when we're really busy, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. And when our house is full of stuff, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. And when we can't open the mail because we're scared it will say that the landlord's doing a check, then it's even more overwhelming. And all of these things pile on top of each other. So I think the first point to make is that we can do more in a 10-minute gap than we think we can. If it's 10 to 11 and we know we've got a call at 11, it's really natural to say, oh, well, I can't get anything done in that time. There's no point bothering. There's no point trying. But then there are other times when we are de-hoarding and we might have put a timer on and we get a load done and we think, how long have I been at it? And it's 10 minutes. Even 5 minutes, you can get a bag out of the house in a minute. You can grab the things that are obvious rubbish around you, put them into a bag while you're waiting for something, while, you know, the clock's ticking. With those really small pockets of time, we can take advantage of them more than we probably think we can. When the kettle's boiling, when we are waiting for the oven to heat up, when we've got 10 minutes till that call, we can do something. We can do something. And something is pretty much always better than nothing. So even if you spend 10 minutes on something and think, well, I didn't get that much done, it's still something. You still got a bit done. But actually, if you think about if you're waiting in a queue at the bank, 10 minutes is a really long time. I had to phone the bank today and I was on hold for 8 minutes and that felt like forever. And that knowledge that the same objective amount of time can feel very different depending on circumstances is quite a useful thing to remember when we're going, there's no point even trying because I've only got 10 minutes. It could be really helpful to make a list of jobs you can do in 5 minutes, jobs you can do in 10 minutes, jobs you can do in 15 minutes. So that if you've got that amount of time, you can get the list out and think, right, 10 minutes, let's have a look at my 10-minute tasks. And maybe you can clean the toilet. Maybe you can get the empty shampoo bottles off the side of the bath. Whatever it is that you've got on your list, it saves you having to make a decision as well. It saves you having to try and come up with an idea in that gap that you've got. If you've got a list on your phone or stuck to your wall, it just simplifies that a bit. It takes a barrier out of the process. Because de-hoarding doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be a full day's efforts or nothing at all. A lot of us are very all or nothing thinkers, which doesn't help. Doesn't help with hoarding, doesn't help with de-hoarding, and it definitely doesn't help with trying to convince yourself that the 5 minutes you've got till your takeaway arrives is worth employing for any kind of household tasks. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. And when you're dealing with a hoard, it can't possibly be all or nothing because you've got a lot to do. You need breaks. They're not optional. And it's going to take a long time in most cases to de-hoard your home. And keep in mind that for the sake of your motivation levels and for the sake of your mental health, you still need to see progress. It really, really helps if you can do something and see a visible difference. So something that helps when you're trying to de-hoard when you don't have enough time is to focus. Focus on a really small area so that at the end of a couple of 5 minute sessions or a handful of 15 minute sessions, you can see a difference. It looks different. That one shelf in your kitchen has gone from chaos to reasonably under control. We're not looking for perfection. That can spur you on to do the next bit. And it can also cement in your mind that there is a point in utilizing your odd 5 minutes here and your odd 10 minutes there. Small victories help a lot. And they also add up. So if you're trying to make the most of time you would otherwise not quite know what to do with, you've got a goal, even if it's a tiny, tiny goal, even if it's clean out your handbag, even if it's one step on your staircase, it's more manageable when it's in small chunks, and it's also more visible, and that helps. When I take bags out, rubbish bags out, and then I take more rubbish bags out, and then I take more rubbish bags out, and that might be over weeks. And then finally one day I come in and go, oh, do you know, it looks better in here. That really, really helps. But that's on the bigger scale. When I do that on a tiny scale, I still get that little boost of going, that cutlery drawer looks great. Or my bathroom sink now only has liquid soap, dental stuff, and facial stuff. There is no empty this and halfway through but gave up on it that. And so, especially when you're tight for time, really zone in on one space. Go really tiny if you need to, but think about how you can get those visible differences so that you can get a quick win and so that you can get that dopamine boost that you need to power you on to the next little space. I make this podcast because I think it's important. I started it as an outlet for myself, but it's become much more than that. And I hear from people all the time about how listening to me talk about my experience and interview specialists and experts is helping them. Hearing those stories makes the time and cost absolutely worth it. But if you want to help to ensure that the future of the podcast is sustainable, you can donate to help with costs. To send a one-off or recurring donation, just go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/donate. Thank you. Also think about what's called productive procrastination. I see memes that say things like, the only way I get myself to tidy my house is when I've got a report due at work. And it's joking, but that's productive procrastination. If you're procrastinating about something, it means you know you should be doing it, but you busy yourself with something else. And productive procrastination is all about harnessing that something else so that even though you're not doing the thing you're supposed to be doing, you are still doing something useful rather than scrolling eBay or scrolling Instagram or whatever it is that your particular time kill is. I even sometimes try to employ this by just shifting the area I'm working on. So if I know I'm supposed to be working on, say, the bedroom, I can somehow convince myself that I really want to work on the kitchen because that's a way to not work on the bedroom. Think about the times you procrastinate. Can you use that time to at least, even though you're not doing what you're meant to be doing, use some of it for de-hoarding? Because every bit of de-hoarding that you do now is going to save you time. Future you will be glad of it. So it's kind of investing time now, putting time in now, so that in the future you have more time. An important way to go about it is to not make things worse as you go. As you may remember me saying, one of my goals, my kind of baseline goal, is to not make things worse. If I can make things better, that's great. But my real, real baseline goal is to not make things worse. And so it may be that you genuinely have so much on that you just cannot work on this stuff. But what is really important is that you focus on, if absolutely nothing else, you're not making things worse. And that means dealing with stuff in the moment. It means when you've cooked your tea, you put the food packaging in the bin now, rather than leave it on the side with all the other food packaging that you've done that with over the last 3 years. If you finish the toilet roll, you take the old centre of the toilet roll off, you put it in the bin, you don't add it to the pile of other toilet roll centres. Not making things worse, dealing with stuff as you use it, is really, really important. And part of that is saying no to new stuff, saying no to additional stuff. even if you only look at this as a short-term thing or as a medium-term thing, think about what's coming into your home and just try your hardest to not add to the clutter you've already got. And saying no to new stuff and additional stuff also applies to your time. If somebody says, can you help out at church on Sunday? Can you help out at the synagogue? Can you help out at your kid's school? Can you help out at the local community centre? It's okay to say, I'm really sorry, I can't. That's hard for people pleasers. It's hard for people who struggle to say no. But ask yourself, do you even want to do the thing somebody's trying to get you to do? And if the answer's no, I don't really want to, then definitely say no to it. If the answer is, I would quite like to do that, then you still might have to say, I would quite like to do that, but I just do not have the time available at the moment. Ask me again in 3 months and I will reconsider. That's not unreasonable. It's completely reasonable. Learning to say no to stuff is really hard, but it's also a good life strategy, whether you're trying to de-hoard or not, frankly. Gamifying de-hoarding can be a useful tool as well. I have a really mixed experience of this, but there's something about not wanting to lose a streak that can help people keep going. Pick a number of items you'll get rid of every day and mark down every day in a row you achieve it. That might be one item a day. In fact, a lower number might help to convince you that you can do it even though you're busy. Might be 10 items a day, might be 100 a day. Even if it's one a day, if you keep that up for 10 days, that's 10 items out of your house. And if you, say, put a cross on a calendar every day you achieve it, once you've got a certain amount of crosses on that calendar, depending on your personality type, there's a strong chance you won't want to break the streak. You will think, oh, I don't really want to do it today, but I've done 14 days now. I don't want a gap in my streak on the calendar. It's something to think about. And as I mentioned earlier, there are things you can do when you're doing the things you have to do. So when you're getting dressed, you might want to pick one item of clothing that can go. When you're cooking, you can have a look in the cupboards for which of the kitchen implements right at the back that you never use. If you're doing laundry, decide if you really want to keep things before hanging them out to dry. And if you don't, throw it out wet. There's no need to waste your energy. Or dry it and put it in the donation bag if it's suitable for donation. It's helpful to remember that being consistent is really productive. There's consistency and there's intensity. And some people do a bit every day and some are do nothing for ages and then do a lot in one go. And kind of by nature, I'm the second, but I have come to know that that is not enough for a project like de-hoarding. And so I have been working really hard on maintaining some consistency, even if it feels inadequate sometimes, even if it's not brilliant. I'm trying to keep something going, while also, if I get the urge to do nothing but that for a while, I try and really embrace that, but at the same time, keep a consistent practice going. Generally speaking, you'll get a lot more done by doing a bit every day than you will doing a lot once every 6 months. And if you're really tight for time, you probably won't have time in 6 months to do a lot. So it's actually easier when you're very busy to do 20 minutes a day split into three than it is to expect that 3 times a year you'll have 3 weeks to do nothing else. Life doesn't generally work like that, unfortunately, for those of us with that kind of personality. It's worth thinking if there are people you can ask for help. Even if you can't ask for help or you don't feel you can ask for help with your home directly, you don't feel like there's someone you can say, can you please come in and help me? It might be that you can ask for help with something else in your life that is time consuming. And that can free up availability, can free up your capacity to do some de-hoarding. If you feel like one evening a week, you could get a lot done, but every evening you're dropping different kids off at different after-school activities and you barely pick one up when you have to drop the next one off. And there's somebody, maybe there's somebody else on your street and their kid goes to the same swimming class as your kid. And you could say, how about I take them both on Tuesdays, you take them both on Thursdays. Or if you volunteer twice a week at the local food bank, it is okay to say, look, I need to drop back to once a week or once a fortnight for a while. I've got a lot on and I don't have any other time in my life to do anything else. That is okay. If someone needs to take the dog to the vet, does that have to be you? If somebody needs to do the supermarket shop, does that have to be you? Look at what's time consuming and see if somebody can take some of that off your hands. And thinking still about time, it can be worth tracking it for a while. I don't think tracking it for the rest of your life is necessarily useful or healthy, but tracking your time for a couple of weeks can really help you to understand your situation, understand where your time is going and where you might be able to free up time. When I was tracking my spending towards the end of last year, I wasn't tracking it so much to change it. I was tracking it to just understand where my money was going. And so I made a concerted effort to track it for a while. And then I was able to see, okay, you spend more than you think you do on that. You spend about what you thought you spent on that and actually a bit less on that. I think if you can track your time and for a couple of weeks and see where it goes, you might be surprised and you might be able to jiggle things around a bit. Jiggle? Is that the word I was looking for? So say Fridays are particularly bad for your commute. Your commute most days is fine, but for some reason, given the hours you work on a Friday, it's nightmarish and you spend what feels like half your day in traffic or waiting for a train. Once you have those numbers, that can be good to approach your work and say, could I change my shifts? Or could I work from home on Fridays? But you won't know that. You won't have the numbers. You might know it in yourself. You might know that Fridays are a commuting nightmare. But once you've got the numbers in front of you, because you've been making a note for a few weeks, you might just see there are things, there are spaces that could be better used. And think about your priorities. I am not even hinting at the idea that you're not actually busy. I'm not saying think about your priorities. If you just prioritize better, you'd have plenty of time. Nope. I don't buy the whole you've got the same number of hours in a day as Beyonce or Elon Musk. I don't buy that. That's nonsense. And I am not saying that your lack of time is merely an issue of priorities. That's not the case. Some people have incredibly busy lives, but it does stand to reason that if you really, really want something like a tidy home, you have to really, really try to fit it in. Remind yourself why you're doing it. Don't just focus on, I have to do it. End that sentence with because. I have to do it because. And remind yourself of why this is important to you. And that will be different to you as it is to me and to the next person. And so with that question of priorities, it might be that you've got an activity that you genuinely love, but that you have to put aside for a short time or a medium amount of time to make the time to de-hoard your house. And that's not fun and it's not ideal. It might serve as a motivator, like the quicker I can do this, the more consistent I am, the sooner I can go back to the book club or the sooner I can start knitting again. And none of this is to say that you can't have rest time or downtime. Rest time and downtime are crucial. They're not a nice to have. They are absolutely essential for your sanity, for your physical health, to reduce the chance of burnout. If I want to semi-wind down, I might put the TV on, but with a pile of stuff in front of me. So I'm watching whatever Netflix series I'm obsessed with that I would be watching anyway, but I'm adding de-hoarding to that. Because this isn't a punitive process where you have to sit in silence and suffer. But you can also just put the TV on. You can also just go to book club. You can take out the knitting. You can ring your friend. So while there are times to fit this stuff in, you don't have to be, and indeed you shouldn't be, on the go every second of every minute of every hour that you're awake. Give yourself grace while you are doing this. You might get behind where you'd hoped you would be. You might have great plans to do it and then not do it. You might accidentally make things worse when you were trying to make things better. Give yourself grace. Forgive yourself if you're angry with yourself. Say it's okay. It's okay. You're just being human. And then direct your attention back to what you were hoping to do and why you were hoping to do it. And prioritizing and looking as objectively as you can at the time you have and the way you spend it, and seeing if you can find an hour on a Saturday morning or the 10 minutes between your kid going out for the school bus and you having to leave for work. Let's talk secrets. I keep my hoarding secret, and I often wonder about the effect that these secrets and this shame have on us and on mental health. To start breaking the taboo, I want to hear your hoarding secrets to discuss anonymously on the podcast. I've created a form to submit your secrets anonymously. I won't know who sends what. If you want to tell me your secret for a potential future episode, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/secret.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support. 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way, so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code ACAST to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
So shout out this week to the Life Kit podcast, which I will link to in the show notes. In this episode, Monique White is giving advice on what to do if you've been saving money and now you need to spend it. In episode 68, I talked about people who hoard money and people who spend too much money because of acquiring. And this felt like good advice for the former group, people who save up and save up and save up and then don't want to spend. Have a listen.
A final takeaway Monique shared with me. If an emergency does happen and all the money that you've been squirreling away and saving so diligently for so many months just suddenly has to be used and your goal is blown up and you're back to square one, that should be a moment of pride.
I understand why they would feel discouraged and they have to reset, but that's what your savings was for. So I would feel extremely proud that you had that to cover, that unexpected medical expense, you know, car maintenance or anything like that. So you should feel so proud that you were even able to save for something like that. And now you're going to reset, and that's okay. That's everyone's journey when it comes to their finances. We're always resetting. We're always shifting. We're always reprioritizing. So I get the discouragement, but you did it. And you covered it, and now we're going to keep going.
So I will link to the Life Kit podcast in the show notes. Okay, thank you for listening. I managed a solo episode without crying. All good. And I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.
On Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.